Good evening, Aaron. How are you?
I'm good. How are you this fine evening?
I'm good. I'm good. Did you have a good Kentucky Derby weekend?
I was unaware it was happening this weekend, but aside from that, I had a great weekend. How about you?
You managed, in spite of not knowing about the Kentucky Derby, to have a good weekend.
It's pretty unbelievable, I know,
It
but.
really is. No, well, my weekend can best be described from a culinary standpoint in the leftovers that I had for dinner tonight, which was Spanish rice left over from Cinco de Mayo, some North Carolina barbecue style pulled pork, and some Benedictine dip with crackers, which was from a Kentucky Derby event I attended. And I'd never heard of this. Like, the hostess was from Kentucky, so she had all these like traditional Kentuckian fare type things. And this Benedictine dip, I think it's basically like cream cheese. I don't know, but it's awesome. I could just eat it out of the thing, except I have standards, damn it.
Don't we all?
I don't know that we all do.
I've never seen anyone at my derby events eating the cheese directly out of the tip.
Well, what was I supposed to do? They didn't have the shrimp with the peels.
I hope they never do again for your sake.
I would like to address that, by the way. For those of you who don't know, I mentioned in our, I think, inaugural podcast that I was at a dinner in which shrimp with the peels was still served, was like served with the peels still on, and I wasn't sure how to eat it, and I remarked that that was probably because I, quote, don't go very many nice places, at which everybody laughed, and it was later explained to me that the nice places don't have the peels on them. Well, at this particular establishment where the shrimp with the peels were served, apparently that's their thing. Like, every event they have, they're like, featuring shrimp appeal, and it's like shrimp A apostrophe peel, spelled like the peel of the shrimp. And so they, like, I guess that's probably the way they justify themselves, like, we're just too lazy to peel our own shrimp. It's fun. You should do it. But yeah, that's like their thing, their shrimp appeal.
I just don't like whenever any sort of food has to have a cutesy name, or whenever the word shrimp is pronounced correctly. I prefer when people call them scrimps.
Well, I wish I'd known that they called it shrimp appeal, because then I would have known for a fact that it wasn't a very nice place. But nobody told me that. Now that I know, I'm like, oh, okay. It's the shrimp appeal place. My God. Well, anyway, so this standards thing, though, brings us to the topic for tonight, which is, I tried explaining it rather unsuccessfully, but it's sort of a double-sided coin, I would say, tonight's topic. On the one hand, it's things that, I guess Erin put it best when she said that it's things in pop culture that are generally considered canon. Like, everybody's like, oh, you know, we all love this thing. And it's something that myself or Erin and or Erin never completely bought into. And then on the other side, it's things that maybe not everybody does like, but that we can't help liking. Is that a good way of describing it?
Yeah, that's perfect.
Okay.
So basically, just us hating on everyone else's likes
And
and
vice versa.
dislikes.
Yes, because we are the arbiters of taste.
There's a word for that, and
King.
sure. No, somebody said it to me once, and they were like, "Yeah, it's this," and I was like, "Oh, you mean like what I am every day?"
Trendsetter?
No, it was something really fancy. I'll see if it comes to me.
Okay, all right. Well, so we kind of went back and forth on some things we want to talk about. Mine is The Sound of Music, and Erin's is Friends, although I agree with her on the Friends thing. So my Sound of Music thing is very brief, and I feel like we both have a lot of feelings about Friends. So I'm going to start with The Sound of Music real quick, and then we can move on to.
Well, don't worry. I'll play. I think I'm going to be playing devil's advocate with this Sound of Music thing. I'm interested in hearing what you have to say about it.
I don't think you will. I think you will be kind of surprised. I think I'm the only person who has this position on The Sound of Music in the whole world. So just wait for me. I think, you know, full disclosure, Erin and I did attend a sing-along of Sound of Music many a year ago that
And I
we
returned later
did
to
you?
attend others.
Did you? Well, it was a highlight for me. I still think fondly about that night, and it was in London at the Prince Charles Theatre and hosted by a drag queen, and we won a cheap bottle of champagne that we later enjoyed in front of Buckingham Palace. And
none of this is made up, we should point
out. I was going to say, no, this is, it never dawned on me that anyone would think it was. No, it's all 100% true. So it was a magical night, and I have a lot of fond memories as they relate to The Sound of Music. I have an intimate knowledge of The Sound of Music, although not too intimate. And I think that's why I feel like I can criticize it, because I know it so well. I do like it, but I just, here's why I have some reservations about it. Okay, so I tried finding it on YouTube so I could play it for everyone to hear instead of me doing my Christopher Plummer impression, but it turns out you're in luck because I couldn't find it, so you get to hear my Christopher Plummer impression. He brings the Baroness, his evil girlfriend, back to his villa in the countryside, and they bring Max, who I guess is, I was never really clear on if they had invited him into their relationship, or he was a gay friend, or, I wasn't really sure, but
it was really unclear what his point was.
Yeah, and he goes with them everywhere, and in the end, his main role is to just sort of create a distraction for them while they flee the country, which is a very brave and nice thing to do for a friend, which is my problem. Okay, so backtrack. They're all at this villa. And Captain Von Trapp is very worried about the Anschluss and the Germans and the Austria he loves fading away. People are reading his telegrams. And, you know, Max is very not, very unconcerned about the whole thing. And he tells him, you know, well, Captain Von Trapp, what's going to happen is going to happen. Just make sure it doesn't happen to you. And here's where Captain Von Trapp just, like, loses his cool and goes, Max, don't you ever say that again.
Yes.
And you think, okay, and that was my Christopher Plummer impression for those of you playing along.
I think
we should
do some more of those.
I think that's how we'll start every, we'll change the name to Max, don't you ever say that again. Anyway, so you're like, okay, good. Captain Von Trapp has the strength of his convictions. He has this flaky friend, and, you know, you tell him, Captain Von Trapp. Well, at the end of the movie, when they're fleeing the Austrian Song Festival, and Max is covering for them, who's really living what Captain Von Trapp says? Like, Captain Von Trapp is making sure what's going to happen doesn't happen to him.
Huh. I guess I never... I never thought of it that way.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's like, oh, you know, where does he get off telling Max what to do? Because at the end of the day, who stays behind to deal with the after effects of the Anschluss? And oh, by the way, don't you think the Nazis are going to be pretty pissed at Max, you know, in the light of day? Max, you probably never hear from Max again after that night. You know, he's probably disappeared after that. And so you're like, okay, Captain Von Trapp, just leave the nuns and Max behind to pick up the pieces. You know, because he could have sent his family. You know, if he had all these convictions and he was so, like, in love with Austria, it seems like he would have stayed behind and been like Stauffenberg with the Valkyrie plot, where they, like, try to bring down the Nazis from the inside. That would have been a cool story. But no, instead it's about this singing man and his, you know, yours, mine, and ours nun family that flees the country.
Well, it's just like a man to do that, you know?
Yes, that would be the, I guess.
That's the moral I picked up on. I don't know if that's what you were trying to drive home.
Every man I've ever known has fled Austria when shit got real.
Probably just deep issues coming up. But I feel like, yeah, it's essentially like a dog eat dog world. And the moral is actually probably that Max was right. And
yeah.
So of course, and when was The Sound of Music made? Like
the 60s.
The 60s.
Early
60s. Early 60s. So not like full on.
It
you
was
know.
Still Kennedy 60s, I think, as opposed to, like, hippie 60s at that point.
Exactly. Like, there wasn't the free love movement yet.
No.
So, I think it was a safe line to go with, you know, like, family and, you know, look out for yourself. The community, you know?
At the end of the day, patriotism will get you nowhere. Just get the heck out of Dodge.
And that's, with your children.
And that's fine. If that's what he wants to do, I don't care. You know, like, if it had been my family, like, yeah, sure. But my thing is, don't, why all the hate for Max? Like, Max was just calling it like he saw it. And, oh, by the way, that's exactly what Captain Von Trapp, basically, in the movie, as portrayed, is a hypocrite. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. And, okay, so this is something that I guess has always bugged me in the back of my mind. I actually really, really like the sound of music.
I do, too. I do. I just, that's, if you think about it, Captain Von Trapp is kind of a hypocrite and just kind of leaves Max out to dry. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, and Max is, like, you're never really told what his deal is. Like, I'm glad you brought up that maybe he's gay.
Yeah.
Like, I always thought that possibly he was Jewish.
Yeah, and maybe he is, which makes it all, either way, if he's gay or Jewish, they left him behind to deal with this. And he was already going to have a pretty rough time of it as it was. You know?
And it's just like, I don't know, he's so weird. And I feel like for a children's movie, there's a lot of, like, adult stuff going on there. Like, I know anytime you bring the Nazis into anything,
right,
you know, things get a little complicated for the younger ones.
To say the least.
To say the least. The Nazis just complicate things. Mm. And, but I felt like Max and also the Baroness, like, as a kid, I enjoyed the movie, whatever, but they kind of belonged in this realm that I just kind of accepted I would never understand.
Yeah. I guess.
Which, I don't know. It just doesn't seem very kid-friendly.
It's not really. And, you know, I kind of feel bad for the Baroness. Like, she handles him breaking up with her for this cute little nun, like, in a very classy way. So, well, I'll just pack my little bags and go back to Vienna where I belong. You know, it's like, you know, she handles that very well. I would have slapped him or been like, are you kidding me? You know?
I would have definitely gotten up to semantics. There would have been a baseball bat at some point.
At the very least, there would have been a, are you kidding me? Like,
oh, man.
And instead she goes, somewhere I think there's a young lady who will never become a nun. You know, and
which is just gross.
With her little Dutch boy haircut. But yeah, you know, it's whatever. And I just feel like their relationship was very complicated. And then the whole Max thing, Max just is, you know, when you're a kid, you're like, oh, he's the fun guy who comes and brings puppet shows to the children. But then as you get older, his presence just becomes baffling and weird.
And like, I really did think he was their uncle.
And he's not.
Yeah, I think it was just my poor little mind at the time just didn't know how to deal with it, and I wanted to put a label on it. They called him uncle at some point, so I'm like, oh, yeah, yeah. But no, he's some weird guy. He's kind of creepy, really.
With the puppet shows, and then he's like, oh, let me be your kid's manager and, like, go on your honeymoon and leave me with your kids. Like, in retrospect, that's all a bit weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I guess, too, the thing about that is he Captain Von Trapp brings Max with him the first time his wife-to-be is going to meet his seven children. You know, like, that would be something that I would think would just be, like, you and your girlfriend and the kids. You know, you're not like, oh, and I'm going to bring my friend, Max, you know?
And how do they know each other? Like,
it's never explained.
And they don't seem to have any common interests.
They don't. Like, I always get the sense that he, like, obviously hated Max.
Yeah, he's like, why are you always here? And, which is another reason why I thought, oh, he must be family, you know?
But he's not.
But he's not.
Basically, Max, I don't get his deal, as you said, and I don't understand what he adds narratively or plot-wise. He's kind of just this huge distraction, and everyone in the movie, like, I feel like there's this whole other world or, like, aspect of their lives that I was not privy to, which is fine, except it's a movie. And so you either edit that stuff out or you let the audience in, but you're not like, oh, you don't need to know what's going on over here.
And it's not like they were trying to fill time. I mean, it's a 3-hour movie.
Right. Like, I just feel like Max's parts could have been easily explained away. But
yeah, or don't have him at all. Like, wouldn't it have been cool if the Baroness, like, stayed behind and let them flee?
Oh, like, sacrificing herself for the family.
Yeah, or, like, you could have had, like, I don't know, a member of the staff or something fill Max's Max's role, just as like the lovable butler or something.
Butler was a Nazi, though.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you'd have to make up something there. But you know, two
butlers, like, one that's a Nazi and one that's nice.
Yeah, or you know, the governess in the beginning. I don't know. They could have figured it out.
The old governess comes back in her company. The one before Maria comes back and she's like, well, you know, this governess thing didn't work out, but I would like to be your manager.
I'm broke, okay? I'm unemployed.
She could be like Reuben to their Partridge family.
Oh, man. Which, so many possibilities.
Well, but that still wouldn't work because then they'd be like, well, then what's the point of Fräulein Maria? Like...
That's true.
And then you
maybe the other superior could have done it.
Then the whole premise collapses in on itself.
They're just like, why are we even making this?
I think that there are a lot of problems. I think it's a problematic movie, but an enjoyable one filled with beautiful scenery. So I guess that's how I would sum up The Sound of Music. Hypocrisy aside, which I think has caused you all to reassess the film. I don't care if you like it. I like it. I just want people to go into this with their eyes open. I think I lost Erin. Hold on. All right, I'm back with Erin. I lost her, but she's back now. Or maybe she lost me. We're not sure. So
something happened.
But I think that was a good breaking point. I think we'd said about all we had to say about the hypocrisy and The Sound of Music. So shall we move on to Friends?
Yes, let's do it.
All right.
So I guess...
Entrez-vous.
Yeah. I don't know. So I feel like... I often feel like I'm in the minority on this because everyone seems to universally like Friends. Mm-hmm. It seems to be like this defining, you know, show in American pop culture. Spanned a lot of time, as American TV shows do. Mm-hmm. And you have... I'm to the point where I don't even know their names. Like, I just... What, Rachel is...
Jennifer Aniston.
And Ross is, like, the droopy face one.
Yes.
You're like, yes, I don't need any more description.
David Schwimmer, yes.
And it's, like... It's just omnipresent. And it's taken for granted, and it's gone to the point of, like, you know, there's the hairstyle, the Rachel hairstyle.
Right.
And I honestly, for the life of me, the few clips I've seen, I don't understand why it's so compelling.
No. And I kind of, because of Friends is the reason I've never gotten into How I Met Your Mother. Everybody's like, oh, you watch How I Met Your Mother, right? And I'm like, first of all, do we still do the multi-cam laugh track sitcoms?
Yeah.
Like, it just seems so, like, you know, throwback-y that I'm like, I feel like I, as a person, have progressed beyond that, first of all. Second of all, I have seen quite a few episodes of Friends. I don't know why. It's like how I've seen all the Sex and the Cities, I think in large part from living next door to you for a year. But I would not say I'm a fan. I just somehow have seen all of them. And I feel like I have a pretty good working knowledge of Sex and the City. And I feel like I have the same thing with Friends, where I'm not a fan, but I'm much less a fan, actually, of Friends, because I feel like Friends, it was on, like, there was some overlap between Seinfeld and Friends. And so Friends was on after Seinfeld in its later seasons. I think maybe only for, like, a couple. I'm not sure. But it just seemed like, oh, we need another show about 20-somethings in New York City. Except that the 20-somethings in, well, they weren't really 20-somethings in Seinfeld. They were young-ish. The Seinfeld people were way funnier, and it just seemed like sort of a pale, like, corn husk doll version of Seinfeld for the less thinking set.
Well, more than that, it seemed a bit like a corn husk of, like, say, people who weren't 20-something-year-olds who wanted this fantasy of what it was like.
Yes.
But they also didn't want to be threatened by the actual youth and vivacity of 20-something-year-olds.
I think that's true.
So they created this weird situation where this group of friends in New York City...
The eponymous friends.
...were... able to afford these great lofts and had hilarious, you know, stories and weird love triangles or whatever. I don't know. Again, I haven't really watched enough of it to know.
Well, but, and it was kind of a sea and a drift of retarded sexuality, to lift a phrase from Spinal Tap, because, like, they were obviously, like, in their late 20s, and by the end of the show, I think they were well into their 30s, and it was still like, oh, are Ross and Rachel ever going to end up together? Is that really a thing? Does anybody have any friends who are just too scared to be together? Like, where it's like, everybody knows they like each other, but they just, gosh darn it, can't seem to, you know, sync up their calendars and their relationship. You know, I don't know. It just, I don't know anything like that, and, like, again, maybe my life is just lacking, but my friends and I don't really have a place where we, like, all get together every day after work, which is another one of my problems with, like, How I Met Your Mother. Or I was thinking about that the other day as I was leaving work, and I was like, gosh, I have so much to do now. Like, who has time to just sit around at a bar after work for, like, hours on end with their friends every day? Like,
not get trashed, by the way.
I was going to say, not drunk, and apparently not, they have very cheap well drinks there because they're just like, you know, I could not sustain that financially.
Oh my God. It's just everything, like, it's just this fantasy world for people, you know, and I was about to say, like, 40 to 50 year olds. But honestly, a lot of people who like it were, like, in their teens when they were watching it.
So they didn't know.
Yeah, and so I don't really understand. I would be interested in hearing from those people what the appeal is, because it's like the conundrum with Two and a Half Men and how that was like the highest you know, rated show when it was on.
Were teenagers watching that?
They must have been. I mean, somebody's watching that show.
Well, I know they were, but, like, if you're saying that, like, oh, teenagers were watching Friends and, like, you know, projecting fantasies of adulthood onto it, I hope nobody was doing that with Two and a Half Men. I hope there were no teenagers being like, oh, I would love to be a single dad with a deadbeat brother living with me.
I think it was more sort of, like, well, and okay, that demographic was obviously much different, but...
I hope so.
But I feel like that's the sort of show, all of these shows are the sorts of shows that families just kind of have on in the background. So you're inevitably going to get, like, older people and then, you know, teens as well as young adults. And I feel like the crossover is, you know, pretty significant.
Except that it wasn't just something you had on in the background. Two and a Half Men is something, I have had it on. If I'm cleaning the house or something and there isn't a new, like, Stuff You Missed in History podcast on and, like, Two and a Half Men is on, I will leave it on in the background so I don't feel, you know, I'm not forced to confront my own mortality, you know. It's just something that passes the time. But Friends, they had, like, Friends trivia games. You know, people would be like, oh, I'm a Ross and you're a Rachel and she's totally like Phoebe, in a way that nobody really does with Two and a Half Men. At least, again, I hope not.
That would be pretty sad.
That would be so sad. Oh, you're like the creepy butch housekeeper. Have you seen Two and a Half Men? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I've seen clips, but I again, don't have deep knowledge.
They have this interesting housekeeper slash nanny for the fat kid. I don't know. Anyway, so, nobody really does that with Two and a Half Men, whereas people, like, will reference Friends, and I get insulted because people reference Friends, like, they just assume, like, oh, well, you watched Friends, you know? And I'm like, no, I didn't. I mean, I saw some episodes, probably in syndication, I think, like, not even when they were actually airing originally. Yeah. And it just didn't really, you know, what's the word, phrase, like, yank any chains or something? I don't know.
I don't know what language you're speaking, push any buttons?
I guess. I mean, it didn't resonate. And, like, you're an urban 20-something. Like, do you all get together at a coffee shop or hang out at one person's apartment all the time?
No, God, no.
And not during the day for hours on end?
anyone who does that, I already distrust, because where are you getting your money? I'm at work.
And they, like, all ostensibly had jobs, you know? Like, Ross was a professor, but he apparently never had to teach.
Yeah. I mean, here's my problem. Okay, I guess the reason I'm not going to give myself credit for this is when I was younger. I just think it was just never on in my house, and maybe that's why. But looking back on things, I would never pick up a DVD box set of Friends and decide to watch it, because it's not only for the reasons we just discussed, but for, like, other reasons that I will detail. Mm-hmm. It's not relevant to my life as an urban, you know, 20-something. What sort of professional struggles have they had? Did they ever have, like, any real drama beyond their weird, like, sexual things? Like, I don't know. Like,
I don't think they did.
They didn't. They were stock characters. Like, I just don't understand how that sort of a show is any more popular than any other sort of show that's on TV. You know?
I don't get why it really took off. I think it filled the void after Seinfeld. And I swear to you, there wasn't, and I wish I could remember the plot point, but again, it was on, like, TBS, like, syndication episodes. But, like, they did this thing where they would do Friends, Seinfeld back to back. I don't know if they do that anymore, but it was a terrible idea, because there was one time, I think I was, like, getting my oil changed or something. That's how I'm going to excuse the fact that I watched the Friends, Seinfeld back to back on TBS. But they showed a Seinfeld episode, and then the Friends episode immediately after had almost the exact same plot. Like, almost the exact same plot. It's like, there's nothing about Friends that's not derivative in some way. Much the same as, I don't even have to see How I Met Your Mother to know that it's derivative of Friends and Seinfeld. And because you know How I Met Your Mother sees itself as kind of a Friends Seinfeld amalgamation, because they have their quirky little, like, phrases for things, their little catchphrases, and their little, like, you know, observational humor, like, descriptions of things, in the same way that Seinfeld did, except Seinfeld already did it, so we don't need that anymore.
Well, I also, like, I would agree with you. I also think that Friends served as this weird sort of bridge between Seinfeld going into the next big thing, Sex and the City.
Mm.
In the sense that, yeah, it was very derivative of Seinfeld, but then you also, the main plot points, like, it seemed to be trying to make them sexier, you know, like, oh, it's so cool, and, like, this is what it's really like, and, you know, about relationships as well. Like, I feel like that's the main driver. But, you know, and I understand Sex and the City has its flaws and whatever, but I think for, you know, a very small segment, you know, again, it's a fantasy world, but for a very small segment of society within New York City, it had some form of, you know, maybe, I don't know, verisimilitude.
It had that, but I think that was because they didn't have a laugh track, and the style was different. If Sex and the City, I would venture that if Sex and the City had been filmed in the same format as Friends, it would be, people would have forgotten about it.
Yeah, the format is a lot to do with it, when it comes down to it, I think, because that is a large, you know, I mean, how I Met Your Mother also has the same format, right?
Yeah, as Friends, yeah.
Yeah, as does, what's that other one? 2 and a Half Men. Mm-hmm. So it's just kind of that, it's the dumbed down version of, like.
And that's the thing, I have friends who love Friends, smart people with advanced degrees and from good schools, who are like, I love Friends, and I'm like, why? What is, why? Why can't I access this part of you? Because you're so intelligent and witty in so many ways, and I just feel like, is it like brain candy for you? Is it the same way that I watch Rebel Monkeys on Animal Planet?
No, that's a very serious program.
It is, because those monkeys mean business, and it's also real life. But I also would not, like, buy a box set of Rebel Monkeys if it was made available, you know? And I wouldn't want a Rebel Monkeys trivia game, you know? Like, I get that it's dumb, but it doesn't consume me. Like, I wouldn't be like, yes, I can't do anything tonight, Rebel Monkeys, you know?
Okay, well, I think this is, like, a good transition. Because now, I'm going to admit, like, when you brought up this topic, there were a few things floating around in my head that, you know, maybe are a part of pop culture. You know, they're accepted into the canon. Mm-hmm. But they're definitely not celebrated as such.
Yeah.
It's just kind of like, oh, we live with this.
Yeah.
And I love them. Like, like, for example, the music stylings of Britney Spears.
Oh, okay. Enlighten me.
I mean, I don't know that. So, I mean, most people would not want to say that they listen to her or like her.
No, not unless they're 12 in 1999. I think I lost Erin again. I think she signed off. I think she was disgusted. I think she will not have that about her beloved Britney Spears. So I'm going to try and call her back and see if she's forgiven me. But I'll be honest, you could be listening on the air to the end of the Maggie Erin juggernaut, such as it is.